Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. The Weekly Worldview, welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls and other things. And like that, and welcome back. It's so good to have you. I'm looking at this first story I have, and I just don't want to start there. It's just depressing. I don't need that. Let me look and see if I have, let's see here. It's Doug McBurney with the Weekly Worldview, by the way, but you already knew that because it's not like you were driving along and you just caught this by accident on the radio. You tuned in on purpose, so you know exactly what this is. So let's just get on with it. Let's start, instead of that, let's start with Elton John. Elton John had kind of a freak out. Apparently he's doing a gig in Vegas lately. And he stormed off the stage this past Thursday night because, well, he was playing his hit, Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. And I guess he lets the fans gather around the piano while he sings the song, and everybody doo-wops and she-bops and bee-bops and dances and has a wonderful old time. But apparently some of them got a little too familiar, got a little too close to Elton and touched him. Maybe he felt threatened. And so he stormed off the stage and then came back on, started swearing at the crowd and telling them what a bunch of, how they were just out of control. Basically, so and apparently a couple weeks ago during the same song he got hit in the face with Mardi Gras beads. So the song, for some reason Elton's hit Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting is inspiring violent behavior on the part of his fans, and we'll get to some reasons why that might be here in today's show. But I just want to give you some of the lyrics from Elton's song. Elton's song, Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, goes something like this. Don't give us none of your aggravation. We've had it with your discipline. Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. Get a little action. And then somebody whacks him in the face with some beads, and they're like, what? Didn't you say you've had it with the... whatever. Anyway, so there you go. So we start with that instead of, well, I'll just go to this other story. I was going to do more lyrics from that song, but they don't really make any sense. So we'll just move on from Elton's unfortunate incident. And instead, we'll move to, well, what should be a constitutional crisis, but apparently nobody cares enough. This is from the Decline and Fall file. The first tranny has officially signed up for the U.S. military, despite the president's ban. Yes, I said despite Trump's ban. Listen to how the Washington Times reports the story. The recruit signed their service contract on Friday. So it's using the demonic possession pronoun there, as if, you know, we are legion and all that. Anyway, Pentagon spokesman, Major somebody or other, told the Washington Times that the Defense Department declined to comment on which branch the individual tranny joined. Come on, we all know it's the Navy. No, I'm just saying that. Maybe it could have been the Air Force, I suppose. The recruit who wished to remain anonymous, we don't know if they signed up as a he or a she. They don't know if the tranny is going to be a serviceman or a service woman. They have not disclosed that, apparently. So the Trump administration, you'll remember, has been weighing the recommendations of the defense secretary over whether or not they should allow trannies in the military. And if you remember back in January, now I remember this. I hope you all remember this. Back in January, Trump announced plans to ban all trannies from the military. Plans? He announced plans? Isn't he the commander-in-chief? I don't think he needs to announce plans. I think he could just do it if he was really committed to it. because he is the commander in chief. No? Do I have that wrong? I believe he is. But apparently, he's been cowed by the fact that two federal courts have ruled the ban is unconstitutional. The ban on trannies in the military is unconstitutional. So what do you do with these judges? Impeach, right? No. Arrest and impeach? No. How about ignore and impeach? Ignore and impeach. That should be what's happening. But it seems, oddly enough, that Donald Trump doesn't care that much about social issues like mental illness and mentally ill deranged people being allowed to infiltrate the military, mentally ill people being encouraged in their mental illness and their bodily mutilation. But he is the most pro family president since, I think, George Washington, or maybe John Adams, perhaps. Donald Trump, most pro-family, most pro, biggest friend of conservatives since Winston Churchill, I think. But he doesn't seem to care enough. He's going to allow the federal courts to interfere with his position as the commander-in-chief. And there's just no, it's inexplicable, unless maybe Donald Trump isn't conservative. Is that possible? Is it? I think it's impossible. That he could not be a conservative. No way. All right. Now, on to some of the reasons that the government is discombobulated and people are jumping and threatening Elton John on stage. Some of the reasons from the American Thinker. This, again, was sent to us by our Arctic Bureau, and we thank you for all of your contributions. The American Thinker reports that nearly all cannabis is now super-strength skunk cannabis, at least in Britain. Yeah. Researchers tested almost 1,000 police seizures from all around England, seizures of marijuana. Not seizures as in, like, falling on the floor and foaming at the mouth. This is marijuana that police seized from criminals there in England in 2016. Out of all the dope that the researchers tested, 94% were of the dangerously high-potency skunk variety. Yeah, and back in 2005, a similar study revealed that just about half of all the dope on the streets was this super-strong mega dope. Anyway, the researchers say that this new super-strong pot puts Britain's 2.1 million cannabis users at risk of schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, depression, psychosis, delusions.
This is medicine.
Medicine. It's medicine, but it's self-administered, and maybe they just have the dosing wrong.
Yeah.
You see, you keep upping the dose of THC, and eventually you go crazy. So their medicine is out of control. And apparently the whole world now is awash in this super strong. And listen to this. People who talk about how wonderful marijuana is because it grows naturally and God gave us pot, man gave us beer, who do you trust? Have you seen that? Yeah. So I guess over the last 50 years, growers have been purposely altering the proportion of THC and other phytocannabinoids. And on top of that, growers also add synthetic THC, which is the most toxic version of the tetrahydrocannabinol. It's synthetic and it's added by the growers, so it's about as natural as cocaine is.
So it's not skunk. Remember yesterday?
What's that now? Huh?
Yesterday's news, local news.
Oh, the skunks. Oh yeah, here in Denver we've had an outbreak of rabid skunks all over town. At least the police are smelling something.
Yeah. Yes.
They think that there's a lot more rabid skunks. But it could just be that high potency mega, yeah. It could be that. But let's go to a story that relates directly to the psychoactive, what we just talked about, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, depression, psychosis, delusion, hallucinations, all of that. And for that, we go to Will Smith. You remember Will Smith, the French prince, did I say the French prince? Of Bel-Air, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I remember when I first got in the service, you meet all kinds of people. I had no idea that white kids listened to rap. I had no idea. And in the bunk below me was a guy from New Jersey, and he was listening to DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. Anyway, it expanded my horizons to know that there were white kids in New Jersey listening to DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. Well, the Fresh Prince, he was interviewed, it was on a radio talk show. And the host asked Mr. Fresh Prince, how do you respond when people make jokes about, say, the fact that your son is modeling women's clothing? How do you, as a dad, deal with that? Which is a question you never want to get. Any of you who have sons out there, I'm sure you understand. And the interviewer also asked Will Smith about his hands-off approach to parenting. And Will said, well, it may have been a mistake. And then he chuckled and laughed. He says, I think we may have gone too far with the whole hands-off parenting thing. Ha ha, hee hee ho ho. And they laughed about it. And then Will says, my son, Jaden, is 100% fearless. He'll do anything. So as a parent, it's scary. It's really terrifying. But Jaden is willing to live and die by his own artistic decisions, and hence, Will Smith's son's Jaden was recently named the new face of Louis Vuitton women's wear. And Jaden told GQ magazine in an interview that he doesn't think he's as revolutionary as Galileo, but I don't think I'm not as revolutionary as Galileo. Leading some to suspect it's a high potency cannabinoids perhaps could be involved somewhere along the line. So he's a, I see I wrote notes here, but my pen ran out of ink. He is a mentally ill asexual freak, and then I can't read anymore because I ran out of ink. So I guess we'll just leave it at that. This is from the Parenthood file. This, what a nightmare. Right? Everybody knows that your son is modeling women's clothing and that you practice your own particular invented version of child rearing by just allowing your child to do whatever they want. You know, that's one of the things that we've lost here in this country, in the whole world, as a matter of fact, is the idea that children are generally tend to be irresponsible and foolish and they need to be restrained and trained. Now, everybody thinks just anything goes, and pretty soon your kid's modeling women's clothing on the runway, and you do an interview. Well, at least Will Smith couldn't get through the interview with a straight face. He had to laugh about it because he's probably quite perplexed and disturbed. And he did admit that I think we may have gone too far, although he doesn't seem to take it very seriously. All right, do we want to talk about what Weinstein's lawyer is saying? Boy, maybe that's a topic I just want to leave aside. Oh, it's Oscar night. Did you know that? He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. You didn't even know it was Oscar night?
No, I'm sorry.
Well, all right, let's leave Weinstein aside. Maybe I'll get to it later, but very distasteful. Instead, let's go to the fake religion file where Oprah Winfrey says she will run for president if God tells her to. Seriously. Yeah. Apparently she's been accosted by leftist billionaires, all just falling all over themselves to give her money to run for president in 2020. And she said in response to all this encouragement she's getting, she says, quote, I went into prayer.
Oh my God.
Prayer, she said, yeah. And here's her prayer. God, if you think I'm supposed to run, you got to tell me. And it's got to be so clear that not even I can miss it.
You're unbelievable. You're so unbelievable. You're unbelievable.
Yeah. All right, so am I to take that to mean you're not buying it? You're not buying the fact that Oprah has an open communications line with the living God and creator of the universe? You're somewhat suspicious of that? Mm-hmm. Or did you just want to hear that wah-wah pedal? Was that it?
No.
That wasn't it? All right. So we have to move on now, away from Oprah Winfrey and all of that. We come to Seth Rich. Does anybody remember Seth Rich? No, you don't remember Seth Rich? Seth Rich was a Democrat operative. That means he had a patronage job over at the DNC. And, a Friday op-ed in the Washington Times was penned by retired U.S. Navy Admiral James A. Lyons, Jr. And in his op-ed piece, the admiral asked a relatively simple question. Why haven't congressional investigators or special counsel Robert Mueller addressed the murder of DNC staffer Seth Rich? He was murdered, by the way, right before the election. Multiple people have claimed that Seth Rich was, in fact, WikiLeaks' source of all those DNC emails that leaked out so embarrassingly for Hillary Clinton and John Podesta and others before the election. And maybe it wasn't the Russians. Maybe it was a disaffected Bernie supporter within the DNC who realized the fix was in for Hillary and decided to do something about it. Talk about a deranged worldview. You're upset that the cards are stacked in Hillary's favor because you like the socialist. Anyway, just pretty twisted. Mueller won't respond to Kim.com. Kim.com is, I don't know what Kim.com is. They call him a New Zealand entrepreneur. He knew about the hacked emails long before they were released. He claims that Seth Rich obtained them with a memory stick, and he's offered to provide proof to the special counsel investigation. But for whatever reason, the special counsel, Mr. Mueller, is not interested. And apparently, neither are the Washington, D.C. police, even though there was a murder. On May 18th, 2017, Kim.com said he would provide written testimony with evidence that, in fact, it was Seth Rich. But crickets after that. There are a number of odd facts surrounding Seth Rich's still unsolved murder. This is according to Zero Hedge, where I pulled this story down. Seth Rich, they say, was gunned down blocks from his home on July 10th, 2016. Well, they don't say that. He actually was. They say that, yes, but he actually was. Washington Metro Police detectives claim that Mr. Rich was a robbery victim, which seems odd because after being shot twice in the back, he was still wearing a $2,000 gold necklace, a watch, he had his wallet, he had his phone, and his key. So it seems that he was not a victim of a robbery. Another unexplained fact is the stolen .40 caliber Glock taken from an FBI agent's car the same day Rich was murdered with a .40 caliber weapon. There's speculation that that gun was used in Rich's murder. There's just so many things that don't fit with the Seth Rich situation. A couple of private investigators at first said, obviously, this wasn't a robbery. And then after the family got together with the DNC and words were exchanged, these people, including the family, who initially was very suspicious, they all got very unsuspicious. Although Seth Rich is still dead and was definitely murdered, nobody seems to care. Because, I don't know, is it one of these things where the police have determined that it's a case that's best left unsolved? I don't understand it. You would think they would want to get to the bottom of a murder, but apparently maybe the bottom is really, really, really embarrassing for a lot of people. And potentially could lead to criminal charges against various people who were involved in killing Seth Rich. And those are people against whom criminal charges simply cannot be brought, because people would start thinking we're a third world dictatorship, because some of the people involved may very well be at the very top echelon of American politics. on the Democrat side. Maybe, possibly. I'm certainly not accusing anyone. But it's just hard to believe that a robber would miss the gold chain and the watch and the phone. I mean, the gold chain around the neck, that's the first thing they grab. Right? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a robber, but if you try to put yourself in the place of if you're robbing someone and they happen to have a gold chain. Anyway, so Seth Rich, still dead. And nobody seems to care. But so let's move. That was from the politics file. And so we'll go deeper into the politics file, where Donald Trump has said something that I absolutely agree with, and I want to support him in any way that I can. Donald Trump has suggested that executing drug dealers could help solve the opioid crisis. Oh, shazam! First of all, Mr. President, we appreciate you speaking common sense on this issue. But to say that it could help solve the opioid crisis, you could just leave the word help out. Because if you started executing drug dealers, you would solve the opioid crisis. Yes, yes. Especially if you executed some of the doctors who are writing prescriptions left and right for all kinds of people. Talk about ending the opioid crisis or solving it. You would end it. Should I give Trump's exact words? Some countries have a very tough death penalty. A very tough death penalty. Yeah. Death penalty's pretty tough. I mean, even if you have a gentle death penalty, it's pretty tough. He says, some countries have a very tough death penalty, the ultimate penalty, and they have much less of a drug problem than we do. Actually, Mr. Trump, in those countries where they have the death penalty, much less is, that would be to misquantify. They have virtually no drug problem in the countries where they execute drug dealers. Very only amongst the worst of the worst criminal element do they have a drug problem. And it's directly related to the fact that they execute drug dealers. And I'm very impressed that Mr. Trump has figured that out. He's very astute. He also mentions bringing a lawsuit against some of these opioid companies. So see, Trump gets me on board, and then he says something where I'm like, wait a second. These companies that make these drugs, they're providing medication for sick people in the hospital. They're not writing the prescriptions. And they're not sending the drugs out with out in the streets with drug dealers. So I don't think suing them. I think if you just stick with the executing of the drug dealers, we could avoid the prolonged and expensive litigation that would be involved in bringing lawsuits against anyone. How about we bring criminal charges against the people who we can directly trace deaths to, which would be a relatively simple investigation, and start executing them. That would solve the problem, Mr. President. So I want to support you in any way I can on that, Mr. Trump. Feel free to call. I'm happy to help. Apparently, Trump's statements came at the end of a two-hour summit on opioid addiction, in which everything else discussed was pretty much unreasonable and useless. But this particular point, that could make a big difference. And I know that alienating Donald Trump supporters is one way to end one's career in the media. Ask Glenn Beck. Yeah, he was doing just fine until he got off the Trump train. And now, I don't know, I hear he's on the verge of bankruptcy or maybe some kind of mental breakdown. Because he was really, really popular, and then they went against Trump. So I know I'm looking for ways to ingratiate myself to Trump supporters so that my wildly successful media career doesn't come crashing down around me. All right.
I'm sorry.
Now, from there, no, I decided a long time ago. See, I knew that there are certain things you simply can't talk about if you want to have a successful career in the media, because you don't want to alienate or make your audience uncomfortable. And I decided a long time ago that I was going to speak the truth, and if that meant I could never really have a career in radio, well, I can live with that. I'm okay with that. I'd much rather just speak the truth to power. Thank you very much. All right, so we go from Donald Trump suggesting the death penalty. We jump right into the science Really? File. We're going to go to the Cosmic Dawn. Are you ready for the Cosmic Dawn? He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. And now I'm distracted again. Ah, the Cosmic Dawn. Yes, let's go. This is from the newspaper in... Oh, no, it's from the Associated Press. Seth Borenstein reporting on the astronomers have glimpsed the Cosmic Dawn, which is the moment when stars switched on. Yes, yes. Mr. Borenstein writes, after the Big Bang, which he states as a fact, it was cold and black, which is stated not as an opinion or a theory, but as a fact. And then there was light. Now, that I'll agree with. In fact, that sounds familiar. And then there was light. Well, see, now that is true that there was light. And it's okay to state that as a fact. So that's the first fact in the story that I've agreed with. Anyway, astronomers, he says, have glimpsed that dawn of the universe 13.6 billion years ago. By the way, that 13.6 billion, that's stated as a fact. It's not posited as an opinion or a theory or a possibility. It's stated as a fact. 13.6 billion years ago, when the earliest stars were turning on the light. The stars were turning on the light. He states that as if it's a fact. They may have detected, these researchers may have detected mysterious dark matter, too. Well, at least he said they may have. Even though it was only a faint signal, it's important because we are made of star stuff, stated as a fact by astronomer Richard Ellis. He says, we are made of star stuff. We are glimpsing at our origin, he says, stated as a fact from astronomer Richard Ellis. So we've got an awful lot of declaratory statements in the opening couple of paragraphs of the article. And that's about as far as the average person gets in reading a news article. One, two, maybe three. Well, let's go to the third paragraph. The signal that was observed by these researchers showed unexpectedly cold temperatures and an unusually pronounced wave. And the best explanation was that the elusive dark matter may have been at work. There's finally another may have been. Dark matter, they're not ready to just call that a fact yet. So now, when you get halfway down through the article, after all these declarative statements about the age of the universe, the fact that the Big Bang happened, the fact that it was cold, and the fact that the stars turned themselves on, now you get all the way down to the fifth paragraph, and finally, the statement is said, they say, the reporter writes, if verified, this would be the first confirmation of dark matter, which is a substantial part of the universe. Okay, it is, huh? It's a substantial part of the universe, really. He doesn't say which may be or is thought to be. He says which is a substantial part of the universe. If confirmed, the next paragraph starts, if confirmed, this discovery deserves two Nobel Prizes, according to Harvard astronomer Avi Loeb. But he does caution that, quote, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. So we're halfway down in the middle of this article, all of these apparent statements of fact, and finally we get down to where, hey, wait a second. Actually, we don't know if any of this is true, and we would require extraordinary evidence to say that, well, in this case, that the stars turned themselves on, 180 million years? I forget exactly when this was. Anyway, let's go on. The early universe was dark and cold and filled with just hydrogen and helium. They state that as a fact. Once stars formed, they emitted ultraviolet light into the dark areas between them. They state all this as if it's a fact. Now, the research does not establish exactly when these stars turned on, except that at 180 million years after the Big Bang, they were on. And that's stated as a fact. Scientists had come up with many different time periods for when the first stars switched on, and 180 million years fits with current theory. Hey, imagine that. It happens to fit right in. Let's see, I have a quote here from, who is this? I have a quote here from a scientist. No, I have a quote here from a scientist. He says, this one of the scientists I quoted earlier. And what does he have to say? He says, the only thing we know from this signal is that something very weird is going on. That's a scientific term, weird. He says, what seems likely is dark matter. Which, listen to this. Regarding dark matter, the reporter says, this is likely dark matter, which scientists have never seen interacting with anything. So we've never seen it interacting with anything, yet earlier in the article, you said dark matter is a substantial part of the universe. Okay. And then he goes on, dark matter, after saying we've never seen it interact with anything, ever, not even once, never, he says dark matter makes up about 27% of the universe. Not 25%, not 30%, 27%. States that as a fact. Scientists know little about it, except that it's not made of normal matter. Okay. That's a lot not to know. Cry, baby, cry. I thought there was going to be a guitar solo. What happened there? All that saxophone. That's annoying. What was I watching the other night? They had Bill Clinton playing the saxophone.
PBS?
No, it was CNN, the history of comedy. Talking about how, about the advent of our political leaders and hopefuls doing late night talk shows. And they traced it all back to Bubba Bill Jeff. Going on, I don't know what show it was, but he was up there playing the saxophone, and I got that creepy chill that went up my back, just like it did back in 1992, when I realized this guy could win. This guy could actually win. Anyway, it was that was certainly a moment in American politics. Yeah. All right. So let's move from there. Let's get away from politics. I'm tired of politics. Let's talk about the latest craze in agrarian chic that's sweeping the nation, apparently out in the Bay Area, among the tech elites. The latest thing is chickens. Chickens are now trendy amongst the Bay Area information technology elite. Egg-laying chickens are very trendy. They're considered eco-conscious. Yeah, so rich people are buying chicken coops, spending as much as $20,000 for a high-tech coop. That's got to be a pretty nice chicken coop. Although, I mean, ours is heated and cooled. It didn't cost $20,000.
What do you mean cooled?
Well, it's cooled through evaporative, or I don't know. It's got the vents up top there, the flaps that open and close. Apparently the Bay Area eco-tech elites are searching for new ways to optimize their birds' happiness as well as their own, which is one of the only normal things I've ever heard of coming out of the Bay Area. Because I can tell you this, if you optimize your chicken's happiness, you will be a happier person. I've learned that. Absolutely. That's absolutely true, and it's completely normal and beneficial and sane. And so perhaps there is some hope for the Bay Area. Now, according to this article from the Washington Post, the average person spends about $15 on an ordinary chicken. But in the Bay Area, in Silicon Valley, you can spend up to $350 for what they call a heritage breed. Yeah, this is a rare non-industrial bird with genetic lines that can be traced back for generations, like at the dog show, but with birds. These heritage breeds that can cost up to $350 are selected for desirable personality traits, such as being affectionate and calm, and the capability of being a lap chicken. A lap chicken is defined as a chicken gentle enough for a child to hold and cuddle. We got plenty of those, and I don't think we spent more than $15 on any one of these birds, right? No. They're also selected for rarity, beauty, and the ability to produce highly coveted colored eggs. Are colored eggs highly coveted? Are they really? I personally have never coveted an egg. I don't think ever. I've never coveted an egg, no matter what color it was. And if you find yourselves coveting eggs, you should check yourself. You've got some kind of problem there. These birds, by the way, are fed a steady diet of organic salmon, watermelon, and steak. So we're definitely behind the curve on that. We feed ours a steady supply of GMO corn, wild bird seed, and what's the other thing we have to put in there for the eggs? Calcium. Which is what? Seashells. Crunched up seashells. Oyster shells, yeah. Now, they say a typical flock is around 4 or 5 birds, but some people go, quote, crazy and can end up with 15 or 20 birds. Those are the ones who go crazy. They have 15 to 20 birds. All right. So that's our latest report on agrarian chic, of which we were in the forefront of agrarian chic. We had laying chickens before it was cool. we had chickens laying before the people at Snapchat, Facebook, Google, and whoever else out there in the vaunted Silicon Valley. But welcome aboard. At least this is something normal that they're doing. It's not dangerous, which is that's unique amongst the Silicon Valley set. So from there, we go to cremation. No, we don't want to go right to cremation, do we? Well, we're going to go to cremation. Apparently, a lot of people get cremated these days. So according to this article from Popular Mechanics, in 1980, less than 5% of Americans were cremated. Now, about 50% are cremated. Now, when I was a little kid, I never heard of anybody getting cremated. I don't recall. Of course, not a lot of people died because I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. But the people who did die, well, I remember the one guy who, well, they had him laid out there at the funeral home, and we went to see him. We didn't really even know him all that well. He was in our high school, and I think I was probably in 7th grade, maybe 8th grade. And we just wanted to see what a dead body looked like. Isn't that creepy? That's boys, right? Little boys. We wanted to see what a dead body looked like. We thought it would be kind of creepy, and sure enough, it was kind of creepy. He didn't look like himself. He had makeup on. And so that was kind of creepy. I think he died in an automobile accident, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, back then, they did it right. You did the whole thing. You did the casket, the funeral. You had the procession. But not that much anymore. Popular Mechanics reports that the rise of Christianity... Now, cremation used to be really popular amongst the pagans. And they made a whole ceremony out of it. But Popular Mechanics reports that the rise of Christianity put the brakes on cremation. And after Constantine adopted Christianity, the Roman government outlawed cremation as a pagan practice. Yeah. And the guy at Popular Mechanics says the theological reason for the ban on cremation was related to the resurrection. People thought it was good to keep the body whole, or at least in one place. Which, that's not an issue for me. I mean, I don't think it's a religious issue. I think that no matter what, even if you scatter your ashes out of a 747 at 35,000 feet on a flight from New York to Tokyo, that when God decides to resurrect you, that he'll find every piece, every little piece. So you don't have to worry about that. Let's see, anything else? There's one more reason that cremation has become more popular. Cemeteries are running out of space. Now that is a logical problem, to which cremation is a valid solution. Also, they report on the price of a funeral. It's unbelievable. Funeral can cost $10,000, $25,000. This is just an average middle-class person funeral. That's a lot of money, so I can understand that. Cremation, the guy quoted in this article, $180. But then the urn costs like $1,000. So what are, they get you coming and going, you know? Anyway, but not me. I do not want to be cremated. So I haven't written my will, so this might stand as my last will and testament. I do not want to be cremated. I want the full ceremony. With all the ruffles and flourishes, I would like to have a band present with stringed instruments, if possible. No saxophones, but stringed instruments, if possible. Hopefully a stretch Cadillac, a new one, too. I want that year's Cadillac. And I want everybody invited, and I will be keeping track of who comes and who doesn't. I will be. So there. That's kind of a depressing topic, right? Yeah, that's depressing. So my extremely attractive audio engineers. So not even a chuckle. Not even a chuckle. So let's go from there. Let's move on to something that might be interesting. Oh, no, I don't want to do that. Oh, boy. Boy, the rest of these stories are... okay, let's go to the Western Civ file. The Western Civilization file. We go to South Africa, where God has spared Cape Town from impending doom with the rain and all that helped with the drought out there. But now the government there is saying that white South African farmers are going to be removed from their land after a vote won in Parliament. They voted in Parliament on whether or not to steal the land from the white farmers who own it, and they voted yes. 241 votes to steal the white people's land to 83. And so the motion passed, and apparently now the new Marxist opposition leader, Julius Malema, is part of a governing coalition that has amended the Constitution, or will likely amend the Constitution, to allow for the confiscation of white-owned land without compensation. Well, there's democracy in action for you. So you got like 2 million poor people, and you got like 50,000 people who own the land, and the poor people vote to take the land from the people who own it. Let's see, Malema, who is a self-avowed Marxist, says that the time for reconciliation is over. Now is the time for justice. See, they're accusing the white landowners of having stolen the land from the South Africans, the native peoples. Yeah. Malema has a long-standing commitment to land confiscation without compensation. Yeah. In fact, in 2016, he told supporters in a speech, quote, "I am not calling for the slaughter of white people, at least for now," unquote. He actually said that, and then was subsequently elected. Let's see, in 2017, white people owned 72% of the farmland in Africa. Now, why that matters, I thought we weren't supposed to see race, but apparently that's when it's convenient, we can. Or not we. Because I wouldn't confiscate a guy's farm, whether he was white, black, red, brown. I wouldn't confiscate anybody's property, and I certainly don't want anyone confiscating mine. Well, the ruling African National Congress Party now says that they had been resistant to this. They were like the rational people against the radical Marxists who just want to kill the white people and take their farms. I know they say they're not calling for the killing of the white people, but if the white people decide not to give up their farms, trust me, then they'll call for, okay, well, let's kill them and take their property, because that's how these things go. Well, even the African National Congress, who was playing the good cop to the Marxist bad cop, even now they now say they unequivocally support the principle of land expropriation without compensation, which is a really nice way of stealing Whitey's farm. Yeah, all of Whitey's farms. It's a nice way of saying it. Different party leaders say this. There's going to be unforeseen consequences. They say this is a violation of agreements made at the end of apartheid. Anyway. So, Nelson Mandela took South Africa from the racists. And let's face it, apartheid was racist. It was. It was terrible. Terrible thing to do. A terrible way to structure a society. But Mandela took it from the racists and he handed it over to the communists and the Marxists. And by the way, a socialist government, a Marxist government, a communist government, that's really just a criminal gang running a government. That's what communism is when a criminal gang runs the government. And now the collapse of the criminal horror of lawless government. In fact, a lawless government on the make. I mean, they're looking to kill Whitey and take his land. And so now the collapse is on full display. And to any rational, reasonable, decent person in South Africa, it's got to be just terrifying. And I am your host, Doug McBurney. And this is the show where we're not afraid to speak the truth to power, even if it makes people uncomfortable. And this might make you a little uncomfortable. This is from the Personhood File. Fox News reports that a 17-year-old Texas girl stabbed her newborn baby to death minutes after it was born and dumped the body at a neighbor's home, went home, and went to sleep. So young Erica Gomez now faces capital murder charges in the state of Texas. one of her teachers says, quote, "I cannot understand what she was thinking or feeling," unquote. Gomez has admitted giving birth in her bathroom, wrapping the baby in a bathrobe, putting it in a shed at her neighbor's house. And then she says she went back home and went to sleep. So she left out the part about stabbing the baby 9 times in her confession. The newborn's body was eventually found by a 13-year-old neighbor. God, that's just got to be horrible. 12 hours after the baby's born. It really upsets me. Children shouldn't be abused, said a civilian who lives on her street. Well, I certainly agree. Children shouldn't be abused and babies should not be killed. But what young 17-year-old Erica Gomez was thinking was that murder is a solution to a problem. That's what she was thinking. Why was she thinking that? Because that's what our society has taught her, especially when it comes to an unborn child. Murder is an option. That's what she was taught, and she acted on her education. And so how do we prevent 17-year-olds from thinking that murdering a child is an option to solve a problem? We have to stop killing all these children. That's one thing. We need to stop teaching the children that when it comes to an inconvenient pregnancy, that killing the child is an option. That's what we need to do. We need to restore the personhood rights of all innocent people. and finally live out the creed upon which our nation was founded. That's what we need to do. All right. Meanwhile, in Winnebago County, Illinois, a political science professor shot and killed his two young sons and then shot and killed himself. I believe this was today. Police were called to the house after the man's estranged wife became concerned. She hadn't heard from her ex-husband and her sons in a few days. They divorced in August and have since been sharing custody of the children. This fella's name is P.S. Ruckman Jr., 58 years old. He's a professor, a political science professor at Rock Valley College and an instructor at Northern Illinois University. So I had a conversation with a person over this past week about, well, we were just talking about all the violence and the shootings and the bloodshed and the murders. And she asked, well, maybe this stuff really always happened. But now the 24/7 media needs news all the time. So now they report these things all the time. Is that possible that that's true? That's not possible that that's true. It's not possible. Because years ago, before we had the 24/7 media, if a father shot and killed his two sons and then shot and killed himself, it would be on the CBS Evening News and the whole country would see it. But it wasn't, because it didn't happen very often. That's why. Now it happens every day. Multiple times a day, families explode. Families detonate every day now. And this is just another example. So murder is an option. And suicide is an option that have been validated in our society. Validation of which leads to more and more marginal people selecting that option in stressful situations. And so that's what's happening. And it's just awful. And so we can't stem the flow of bloodshed in our own country. So what can we do for other emerging countries, so-called less fortunate countries? Let's take Nigeria, for example. Nigeria, CNN reports, Michelle Fitzpatrick at CNN reports that about 100 girls are missing after Boko Haram attacked their school in the northeastern region of Nigeria. So we all remember a few years ago, Boko Haram attacked the school and they kidnapped the 300 girls. That was the Chibok school. Boko Haram kidnapped nearly 300 girls. More than 100 of those remain missing or in captivity. Their whereabouts are basically unknown. They are the disappeared now via Boko Haram, which is an Islamic terrorist organization. Islamic supremacists, Islamo-Nazis, I don't know what you want to call them. But here we can't do anything. And this is the type of thing that I wish my country could go and help these people. By killing and destroying all these evil maniacs who are kidnapping their girls. But we've got our own issues here. We've got family detonations occurring and school shooting. There was another school shooting. Or at least the kid murdered his parents, I think. And then went to school. But just didn't get a chance to shoot the place up. I think it was in Ohio. I can't. Anyways, you barely made a blip on the news because... Well, the kid only killed his parents. That's not as shocking as it used to be, apparently. Anyway, but I really feel for these Nigerian families whose children have been kidnapped by maniacs. Just unbelievable, horribly terrifying. The pain that the parents must be going through, and the rest of the world seems helpless against a band of criminals hiding in the jungle. And, of course, now that Michelle Obama and her mom are no longer in office, there may be no other hope. Michelle can't tweet out a hashtag and get the girls back. It's just a shame, because if we hadn't squandered our moral and physical capital over the past number of decades, maybe we could strike these terrorist criminals wipe them off the face of the earth, rescue the children. That's what I would like to do. Or that's what I would like my government to be able to do. When something as terrible as this happens, I would like us to be able to act, but we can't. Because we've squandered the capital that would be necessary to muster, to launch a serious effort. All right, so let's get an update on conservatism and liberalism. How bad is it getting out there? We'll talk a little bit about, well, let's start with liberalism. Apparently, Antifa in Texas is recruiting students with mental illness and saying that we want the mentally ill and we want to politicize them. This is the Revolutionary Front at the University of Texas at Austin. And they say in order to address the mental health needs of students, we want them to join us and become more committed to revolution and more capable of carrying it out. Yeah, their program is called Turn Illness into a Weapon. They want to create a healthcare system, treat students for mental illness, and then mobilize them to fight capitalism. That's, yes. They want to organize those suffering to come into violent class conflict with the system that creates their mental illness. And that system, of course, they say is capitalism. The group admits that members of its own leadership suffer or have suffered from mental illness themselves. Well, maybe that explains why they want to come into violent class conflict with capitalists. It's because, just as we always suspected, they're all crazy. How about that? Finally, an update on conservatism. There's a new conservative upstart political leader who's on the rise in Germany. 37 years old. He is staunchly conservative. One of Angela Merkel's loudest critics regarding topics such as mass migration. And did I say he's a conservative? The French press agency says he's staunchly conservative, anti-Merkel. He's Germany's new health minister. And his promotion has been seen by experts as Merkel trying to placate the conservative wing of her Christian Democratic Union. That's the name of Angela Merkel's party. The Christian Democrat Union, which is the conservative party in Germany. And this fellow, Jens Spahn, that's his name, Jens. Jens Spahn is 37 years old, and he's also an open homosexual. He's an openly homosexual, He's a flag bearer in Germany for the right wing. An openly homosexual, So there's your... So the liberals are all crazy over at Antifa. And the conservatives in Germany have gone gay. And they say he's on the path to clinching the country's top job, apparently, there in Germany. So, things are certainly looking up, aren't they? Yes, well, it's not that it makes me look forward to the whole funeral with the Cadillac and the flowers and the band with stringed instruments. It's not that bad, but, well, you people need a lot of help, so I'm glad I'm here, and I appreciate you being here listening to the Weekly Worldview. And I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at Denver Bible Church, and at AmericanRightToLife.com, and, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.